Well, good afternoon. Happy to have you along. This is Local Matters for a Friday. I'm your host, Dwight Henry. My guest again this week, Jake Hoot. Jake, good afternoon, sir.
Hey, man. How are you?
Let's do it again.
Yes, sir.
Last week, we talked with Jake about growing up as a son of missionaries in Haiti and Dominican Republic and experiences there, like going 2 weeks without electricity and playing in the dark and planning churches, and actually your music started there.
Yes, sir.
Did your dad say, son, you're gonna learn to play guitar, we need a worship leader, or how did all that start?
At that point we were just singing a cappella, and somebody had actually come down to the Dominican to visit us and left their guitar for me. It was like, man, you know. And
they
so
left it for you specifically?
They did, and I can't
little,
I'm trying
wow,
to remember.
Wow, they left it and said, this is yours?
Absolutely.
Now,
yeah.
Little did you know.
Little did I
where
know.
Where that guitar would take you. Mm. By the way, we talked about this last week. This is the same Jake Hoot that you probably saw on The Voice, and that voyage still continues, and maybe we can pick his brain and get as much information as we can out of that. Some you're contractually obligated
absolutely,
not to tell
yes,
us.
Absolutely,
yes, sir. So we won't tell anybody, just you, yeah, me,
just
a few thousand
of
your close
yeah,
friends.
No, yeah, exactly. Word of mouth, that's it.
But this guy left the guitar. You were doing a cappella in your church in the Dominican Republic, where your mom and dad were missionaries, and he came and visited and left a guitar specifically for you.
Yes, sir. And
wow.
You know, that's one of those God moments you
yes,
know,
it
that
was.
People talk about that. You know, you just have people out there that, you know.
You had 9 children. He could have left it for any of them.
Absolutely.
Or your dad.
Absolutely, yeah. So, yeah. I mean, and dad sings. I mean, dad's got a great voice, and got a bunch of siblings that got great voices. But, yeah, they left it for me, and it just kind of went from there, learning and watching people. And so, yeah.
Wow. I'm sorry, this is yours. You said, okay, since it's my life, I might as well learn to play it.
Absolutely. Well, I mean, I've always loved music, and I was the one out of the 9 that just, you know, music was my thing. Like, and there was a couple others that, you know, loved music. They sang all the time, this and that. But to me, music was this thing that I was like, and I almost went to college. Fun fact that no, not a whole lot of people know. I almost went to college for opera because
really?
Now I couldn't sing anything right now because I've got like this head cold going on. But yeah, I used to love classical music and opera. And so I every once in a while, I'll belt it out. And the last dog that I had before he passed away, anytime I'd start singing opera, he'd be back there.
You don't think he died early because of
yeah,
that?
Yeah, I hope not. You know? But yeah, I almost went to school for opera. And I always loved music. And so when I got that guitar, I was bound and determined to do something so I could make some noise somehow. So.
And it started in church and led to, I know you played for a few years around here at various places. I commented on every time I showed up a lot
yes,
to
sir,
your concerts
you
and really enjoyed them. Particularly, I love the way you do the Eagles stuff.
Oh,
still
man.
Do.
My favorite band.
And I'm telling you, love the way you do that. And of course, we talked last week about the missionary experiences and what you gained out of that and your walk with Christ and what you learned there and how God used and got you started. And then you came to, your family came to the Carthage area because your parents were raising funds to serve as missionaries, and deputation brought you to Carthage, and that's
yes,
how
sir.
You got here. Then you came to Tech, okay?
I did.
Now, we got to explore this just a little bit. Homeschooled, you talked about last week,
yes,
which
sir.
Is wonderful. And so, obviously, probably you didn't have a homeschool football team.
Did not, no.
And probably didn't have a midget league football team in Dominican Republic.
No, not at
so
all.
So you had never played a football game.
No, sir.
But you decided, and you remember Jerry Clowery? You've heard that name?
Yes, sir.
He's a comedian now. He did a story one time about the first football game he ever saw in I think Mississippi State. It's the first football game he ever saw he played in. He'd never seen one before. Now, that's a story he told. I mean, all stories are true. Some actually happened.
Absolutely, exactly.
But so he told that story. But you decided, after not playing football.
Yes, sir.
To, in high school or otherwise, to walk on at Tennessee Tech.
Yes, sir.
Now, what were you thinking?
Oh, gosh. I still don't know what I was thinking.
That's a great story. Tell it.
Yeah. So, I'm one of 9 kids, and so the first 4 kids were all boys. And so we were all really close in age. And so we played baseball. We played soccer, like just out in the street, not actually organized
yeah.
teams. And football was one of our favorite ones. And we taught a bunch of kids down there to play. And so we'd play all the time. And then when the oldest daughter got old enough, she would come out there. And then it ended up becoming like all the siblings would come out there and play. And
all,
you know,
9 of you.
All 9. And we had a team at that point.
You know?
Yeah. And so, but I always wanted to play. And when I moved back to the U.S., obviously I moved back to Carthage because my older brother was already living in Carthage at the time, and I wanted to be a member at Cornerstone. And it was between Cumberland and Tennessee Tech, and I looked at both of those programs. And that fun fact is, Coach Alexander was actually the head coach at Cumberland at the time.
Yeah, who coaches at Tech now.
And so I went out there and met with him and was super impressed with him. I mean, I love the way he
great man, yeah, great Christian
absolutely. And he put emphasis on, you know, he said they are student athletes, but they are students first. You know, and we expect, you know, we want you to leave here with a degree and a good education. But there was just something drawing me to Tech, and I think it was the Cookeville area and just the people here. And so I actually picked, you know, Tech, and I called them one day and I said, hey, I'd like to come and try out and walk on, you know.
And they said, where did you play high school football? Well, I didn't.
Yeah, exactly. So I said, no, I grew up in the Dominican. So they're like, well, just come out anyway. And obviously, I think my size helped a little bit when I walked in the football office. You know,
I bet Watson Brown said, yeah, you big old boy. Yeah. You might be able to do this.
I met with Coach Sam at first. And, you know, at that time, I think I was 6'5", and I think I weighed about 290. And so I was, you know, bigger dude. And they let me try out, and I worked out with the team. And Coach Brown, Coach Thomas Cox, Coach Sam, and every offensive lineman that I've ever played with at Tech were some of the most patient people to put up with my questions and my inexperience, because I didn't know a single terminology. I didn't know
the language. Football. By the way, we're happy to have you with us on Local Matters. My guest this afternoon, Jake Hoot. We're talking about his walking on, trying out for a Tennessee Tech football team, not having played high school football or ever, except in the backyard in the Dominican Republic. So, but football has a whole, it's a language. I mean, it's like Spanish.
It really is.
And when they said, like, I think I heard you say pull, when they said pull, I mean, I would think like, pull, you know, but football, pull is not pull. What is pull?
Absolutely. Well, I mean, it's when your guard comes around the back side and he goes up to hit like a linebacker or corner. Okay. But funny story, that same terminology, my first practice I ever put on pads, I didn't know how to put pads on. I didn't know how would feel. Like the equipment manager at the time, his name was Dog Daggett. He's since passed away. But he gave me a helmet and I put it on. He goes, how's it feel? And I said, I don't know. I don't know how this is supposed to feel, but let's do this, you know? But the coach came up to me and goes, I want you to pull. And I literally turned around and I said, pull what? And I mean, they were just like, all right, you know, okay, so you're going to pull, you know, and they told me
this is a football.
Yeah, exactly. You know, and so, and I mean, and especially offensive linemen, not, you know, everybody on that field is having to, you know, football is as much mental as it is physical, and you're having to go through all these different things, but especially offensive linemen, because you're supposed to be protecting the quarterback, who, you know, and you're making all these different calls and different, you know, adjustments, especially when the quarterback comes up and is a Peyton Manning, he's calling audibles left and right. And that you have to think on a dime. And so trying to get that basic knowledge as like a habit, you know, whether it was the steps, whether it was the way your hands move, you know, like it took a long time, but I was lucky enough to earn a partial scholarship by the end of it. I was on the championship team in 2011.
Yeah, the last championship. First one we've had since I was a student at Tech.
Since, I think it was 76.
I was in the stands. And then the last one, you were on that team. And I remember Jake having a conversation with Watson Brown about you. And he was impressed by your, you know, your attitude, the way you walked on. And then he said, and Jake was, he said he was, worked himself into a position where he was going to play a lot. But then you decided, you made a decision about music.
Yes, sir.
I think that's what as I recall our conversation.
Yes, sir. Yes,
he
sir.
He said he worked hard. He said he got a partial scholarship. Never played a game.
Yes, sir.
Until you got there. And then he said, and he worked himself that way. But then he started thinking about his life and his future and decided to pursue music, which is pretty much how it happened?
Yes, sir. There was, I mean, and obviously, like I said, you know, my faith is very important to me. And between the way I felt, and this is nothing against anybody, I mean, they encourage that stuff, but I didn't feel like, you know, it was, you know, I prayed about it a lot. And so I was trying to get into music more along that side, that time. And it just, you know, it felt like the right move for me to step away from, as painful as it was and as many games as I went to and practices that I drove by and was like, maybe I made the right, maybe I made the wrong choice. But God just gave me that peace that it was time to step away. And I'm very grateful for every opportunity that Coach Brown, Coach Cox, Coach Sam, every coach that was there and player that gave me the opportunity to play. Like that was an incredible thing to be a part of.
But it's really interesting the way you phrase it, but in your heart, or sometimes I like to call it your knower, you just knew that, and you mentioned, Jake, earlier that you've had this love for music as long as you can remember, and you were a music guy in the family and played the guitar in the churches there and led worship, but you just in your heart had a peace about I need to spend more time with this, with music. Is that kind of where you were? I mean, is that, I mean,
yes, sir. I think
that was some years ago. How long was
absolutely? Oh, that was back in 2012, 2011, 2012. Yeah. I mean, it was 2012. I don't know. It's hard to explain. You know, some people say they hear an audible voice, and some people say it's just a feeling. Some people, you know, they wait for a door to open, you know, an opportunity. And I think for me, it was just, you know, God had been, you know, tugging on my heart for a long time, and not that there was anything wrong with playing football, not at all. But it came to that time, and I struggled with it for a long time to finally decide, okay, I think this is the right move for me. And so, you know, I stepped away and I played music at open mics and stuff, but I didn't start pursuing music a lot until after college. But I think being able to focus a lot more on academics and focus on the music and everything else that was going on, I think that was, I mean, I know it was the right choice at that time for me.
Yeah, looking back over the years, since 7-8 years since that happened, considering all that's happened to you and where you are now, I used the phrase that I used last week, unconscious preparation.
Absolutely.
Getting you ready for what you're doing now.
Absolutely. Well, I mean, you know, if you've played any kind of organized sports whatsoever, you know the discipline that goes into it, and you know the consistent just hammering of, you know, hammering things into habit, you know, hammering and just making things habits rather than, you know, thinking about them and having to make yourself do them. You know, they just become a habit. And, you know, I know that playing football helped develop, you know, my drive and my discipline for what I do in music, because, I mean, you know, you just develop those things where it's just like you work so hard at this craft to play and to be good and whatever, earn a starting spot, earn a scholarship, and win games. And you, I mean, that definitely plays over into when you're doing music, because you got to do so much preparation, and playing guitar becomes a habit rather than having to sit here and think, and, you know, and being able to hit certain notes and what chords you're going to play it in and stuff like that. Like, everything, you know, just kind of ties in together.
Well, hey, stay with us. There's more with Jake Hoot on Local Matters when we come back.
What's so important about shopping with locally owned businesses?
When you shop local, your hard-earned dollars stay here in the community, helping to benefit your friends and neighbors, local schools, roads, and all aspects of community life.
But what happens to my money if I spend it online or at a national chain store?
In most cases, the profits go far away, out of state, corporate headquarters, or even overseas.
It doesn't take any extra effort to shop local. OfficeMart on South Jefferson and Cookeville is your locally owned office furniture and supply store. For over 35 years, they've been proud to serve businesses in the Upper Cumberland with quality and value. You get real customer service too. And unlike shopping online, you can actually see and try out the large inventory of office furniture in their showroom. And when it's delivered, it's not a box on your step. They're glad to install and set up everything. OfficeMart. There's no other locally owned office store in the region. South Jefferson Avenue across from Hardee's. Shop local at OfficeMart.
Hey, we're back on Local Matters. I'm your host, Dwight Henry. My guest again this week, Jake Hoot. And Jake, let's move now. We've covered a lot of ground.
We have, yes, sir.
As a child in Haiti, Dominican Republic, growing up as a son of missionaries, and how you started in music, and how you walked on as a football player at Tennessee Tech, made the team, partial scholarship, 7-8 years ago, decided a love that had been in you your whole life, you wanted to pursue, and that is has taken you, and I heard you played some years, still do around here, and
yes,
lots of different places, and of course, we all love you, and we care about you. We're not really objective. We love you, but we said, man, this guy's good.
Oh, well, thank you.
And all of a sudden, not all of a sudden, I mean, you know, all of a sudden for us,
yeah,
you know, but there you are on The Voice on TV.
Yes,
now,
sir.
Let's take that journey over the next 12 or 13 minutes. Did you just wake up one morning and say, hey, I want to be on The Voice? How did that all start?
Well, honestly, it started way back when I auditioned for American Idol back in the day.
I did.
I think I was a college student at the time. And I went out to Nashville for their open call where you see all the lines of people. Did not like the process at all. And literally they walked me in, and I sang with four other people. Like, we all took like turns singing about 30 seconds, make you step back in the line. They were just like, you know, we're not really interested in any of y'all. You know, they said it nicer, but, you know, not really fit for this season. So you leave, you know, you wait there for hours and hours just to get 30 seconds of. So I just, you know, on my drive back, I told, you know, a close friend of mine at the time, I was just like, you know, I'm not doing this again. Like, this ain't worth it. Like, this was a terrible experience. And earlier or later last year, I got an email, and they somebody from The Voice had seen some stuff of mine. And
on your try for American Idol? Or
no, this was American Idol was back in college.
Okay.
And this was, you know, years later after.
They saw some videos
and they reached out and they said, we'd love
you
for you to come in.
You know how they happen to see them or what you're doing?
I have no, I think they've got a social media team. I don't know all the behind the scenes, but but they reached out and at the time I told my girlfriend, I was just like,
so
I think this is fake. Yeah, they found me. And I was like, I think this is fake. I'm not really going to buy into this, you know. And I even sent them kind of like a questionable email. Like,
what did that initial email, what did it say? Hey, come to Los Angeles? And
Well, no, it said come to Nashville because they were having an open call audition in Nashville. And they said, we'd love for you to come out. And so I went out and, you know, you audition and stuff. And you still, you know, you have to go through different steps before you get to actual televised part.
Oh, sure.
And it's a months long process. And somehow I kept getting through the next round and getting through the next round and getting through the next round.
So you jumped through a lot of hoops before we saw you on television.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And they do. And I will say one thing about the show. They do such a good job of their casting and of their producers and everything. I mean, they're just all so welcoming and they're great at weeding out a lot of people with egos and stuff like that. And by the end of it, everybody there is family and everybody there is just, you know, everybody's encouraging each other and whatnot. But I ended up making it to the blinds and the blind audition is where you sing to the back of the chair.
Was this in Los Angeles?
This was in Los Angeles.
So they said you made it through the Nashville and hoop after hoop, jump after jump. And they said, okay, come to Los Angeles.
Yes, sir.
And you're singing in the blinds called the back of their chairs. Where they turn around. Okay.
Yes, sir. And so, okay. Yeah. So you prep for it and they tell you, you know, they say, don't sing to their chairs. Don't focus on that. You know, focus on the crowd around you. And so that's what I tried to do, but I was still nervous as I'll get out.
I bet.
Yeah. And I went out there, honestly. And I mean, every step of the way, just like I said, it was fake the first time, you know, and every step of the way I said, okay, well, I'm not going to make it past this. Well, I'm not going to do this, you know, just continue to doubt myself. And before I went out there, I remember telling my girlfriend, I was like, I'm not going to get a chair turned, but I'm excited to come home and see, you know, and whatnot. And sure enough, almost through the end.
For people who may not be familiar with you, you're singing to the back of the chair. They've got four artists.
Yes, sir.
And if one of them hears you and wants that artist to be on their team, they turn their chair around and look at you and say, I want him.
They hit a button and it turns their chair. And then if you get more than one chair turned, then you as an artist get to pick which coach that you want to go with.
Yeah.
And so you sing about, I mean, a little over a minute, and it seems like 15 minutes while you're up there.
What did you sing to the blind?
I sang When It Rains, It Pours by Luke Combs.
Oh, yeah.
And I love that style of country music, and so I sang it. And towards the end, Kelly Clarkson turned her chair.
Wow.
And I blacked out the rest of the time.
How did that make you feel?
She
turned her chair, and you said, I'm on her team.
Yeah, and she took, you know, because they each have 12 slots. And, you know, she thought enough of me to let me take one of her 12 spots, you know. And so it was a surreal moment. I don't remember finishing the song. I don't remember talking to the coaches afterwards. But
you really do not?
No, I don't remember what was said because I was just, I don't know. I just kind of got in this.
And when she turned around, you're still singing.
Absolutely, yeah. You know,
if it had happened to me, I'd probably just stop.
Yeah, well, I mean, they showed my face and I kind of smiled, but I was just like, I've got to finish this song. I've got to finish it, you know. But no, it was just a surreal experience. And I mean, just every step of the way has just been an incredible thing. And I'm
but
so glad.
Right. We see all the lights, all the you know, atmosphere. We see all
yes,
of that
sir.
In the audience. But you're right there playing the guitar and doing it.
Yeah.
Just like you did in the Dominican Republic.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yeah. And honestly, you know, and at all the venues around here that I've played for years, you know, I mean, every step
is
of the way.
Is that somewhere when I see you at Spanky's, Red Silo, I know I've seen you at other special events.
Yes, sir.
It was just getting you ready for it, wasn't it? I mean,
absolutely.
It was just getting you ready for that moment.
Yes, sir. Well, like we talked about last week, you know, it's one of those things where, like I said, you know, God is, you know, God takes you down so many different paths, and those paths that you're on, you know, they're learning experiences and playing for a bunch of people at Spanky's, Red Silo, Bull and Thistle, 37 Seater, Happy Trails. I mean, there's just so many that, you know, have graciously opened their doors to let me come in and play. And that just kind of set the scene, but it still was a different experience that, you know,
I can imagine.
Yeah.
Hey, we're glad you're with us. This is Local Matters for Friday. I'm your host, Dwight Henry. Jake Hoot is our guest. We're talking about his experience on The Voice, which continues as we speak. Now, this you've at this airing, some other things have happened, but you won, you got the chair turned, the blinds, absolutely. And then you went to the battles.
Yes, sir.
Which means you were competing against someone else on your team.
Yes, sir.
And I saw that down at Red Silo.
Yeah, I appreciate you coming out.
Oh, I enjoyed it so much. So proud of you, man, really.
Thanks, man.
I was there, and the thing that I really noticed, man, the guy you were on your team that you were competing against, really a talented guy.
Oh, phenomenal.
And it seems like that y'all really, I mean, they really become good friends. They really
absolutely.
Like each other. I mean, when they announced that you were going to advance, I guess that means he wasn't. But he's, I mean, the embrace. I mean, it just seems like y'all have just really developed a real admiration and love for each other.
Absolutely. Well, and like I said earlier, you know, it's one of those things where the show does such a good job of, you know, of picking not only high quality musicians and artists, but high quality people. And Steve Cannell is who I battled on there. We sang "You Were Always on My Mind" by Willie Nelson.
Yeah, and they picked that out.
Yeah, and they picked the song for us.
I think I've heard you do that song.
Yeah, I played at shows, and that's why I tell people, you know, when they told me I was going against Steve, you know, it was one of those things where I just kind of like dropped my head. I was like, oh man, because Steve is good. But
and
then they said, well, you're singing "You Were Always on My Mind," and I had a little glimpse of hope because I was like, I've sang this song before, so I think I'll be all right. But it's still, you know, you go against somebody like that, but you become family while you're there, and you go into these competitions not going, I'm going to beat you. Yeah, and you don't go in there going, okay, I'm going to beat you. You go in there going, okay, one of us is going to win, and the other one is going to get stolen to another team. Like, we're both going to make it through this, and we're going to make a performance tonight that people won't forget about. And so, ultimately, you're cheering each other on the whole time, you know, just because it's this thing where you're family, you want to see the other one succeed, you want them to stay on the show. And so, that, you know, Steve and I...
If they effectively lose or don't get picked, they can get stolen by
another
coach.
Each coach has a steal and a save, and the coach from another team can steal that person, or your own coach can hit save, but you only got one apiece. And so, it whittles it down from 48 to 32. And unfortunately, Steve wasn't stolen or saved, but I mean, he and I, you know, we stay in touch all the time and talk about it. And, you know, it was a heartbreaking moment, but it was also exciting to be able to think, man, I'm moving on. And
when those guys were calling your name, and they all four of them went down, and you were it. And then you moved on to,
I'll be moving on to knockouts next.
To knockouts. Right? Now tell me about knockouts.
Knockouts is basically, so like I said originally, you know, Kelly has 12 slots on her team. Every coach does. It whittles it down to, I think, 8 after battles. And so now she's got to pick four pairs of two. So we're still battling, or we're still going against people in our own team. But instead of singing a song together, whoever I'm going against, I will be singing a completely different song. So I'll sing a song, and then I'll sit down, and that person will get up and sing a song and sit down. And so that's how knockouts work, and it whittles it even down further. But that's coming up, I think, in the next couple weeks. And
yeah, so as we tape this, so you're getting ready in a few days to fly back to Los Angeles.
Yes, sir.
For the knockout part of it.
Yes, sir. I'm excited, man.
And this has just got to be more than a dream come true. It's more than, I mean, you know, you think about, you know, picking that guitar. That I still can't get over the fact that you're there in the Dominican Republic, you're planning churches, and you've got music, which is a cappella. Somebody comes and visits, and they leave a guitar there, and they leave it specifically for you.
Yes, sir.
And you pick it up and teach yourself to play it, and now here you are.
Yeah.
Little did you know. But you know what, Jacob, we've talked about your faith and your belief in God and all that, you know, but we serve an all-knowing God.
Oh, absolutely.
Who knows everything, the end from the beginning, and he knew he was getting you ready for the voice when you had a guitar in the Dominican Republic,
yes,
teaching
sir.
Yourself how to play it. Isn't that an incredible thing to serve a God like that?
It's chilling. I mean, it's just, you know, it's one of those things where, you know, if you ever question God or something like that, you just look around and you can see all the things that he just... You know, and there's a lot of things you don't see that he's doing even now, you know, but you just...
As we sit here, we're being unconsciously prepared for something else.
Absolutely.
As long as we're on this earth, God's got stuff for us to do, and he's using all of our experiences and our mistakes and
absolutely.
All like that to get us ready for whatever's next to serve him and to advance his kingdom.
Absolutely.
Don't get me to preaching.
Absolutely. Hey, man, preach. No. And, you know, I'm trying my best to always keep that in the back of my mind and not let any of this kind of stray me from the path that I'm set on, and God has allowed me to be on this incredible platform, and he's given me this opportunity, and I want to be able to use this platform to to help in missions or help, you know, communities or do whatever I can and give back. Because, you know, I've been, obviously I've been very blessed growing up and blessed the way I was raised, and very blessed since I've been back in the U.S. and, you know, have done very well. And I just want to be able to give back a little bit of that and promote whatever I can while I have the platform that I do. And so it's been fun, and I'm looking forward to what comes down the pike.
Jake, thank you. I've been really enjoying this, man.
Really, this has been great. I really do appreciate you having me in.
And think about us when you're in Los Angeles.
Yes, sir. Always, man. Always.
Jake Hoot's been our guest for the last couple of weeks. So happy to have you join us. Next Friday, we'll be back for more Local Matters.